Podcast 74 in 3, 2, 1.
Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle. www.serotalk.com, a production of Serotalk Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Michael Loft.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 74 for August 15, 2011. This is Michael Loft.
I'm Ricky Enger.
And I'm Joe Steinkamp.
Well, many of you love the Serotalk Podcast, and of course, most of you know we also have the Serotalk Tech Chat. But because Tech Chat is, quite honestly, kind of a generic name, and when you search on Google and other search engines and type Tech Chat, you could get anything. So we're looking for a new name that better describes kind of what we do in our chats, that kind of explains the subjects that we cover. So we're giving you a chance to win 150 Serotalk dollars. That's right. You can use them on Serotalk software and services.
Woohoo. Now, who wouldn't want that? By the way, just fair warning, you can't send along just a symbol that would stand for the artist formerly known as Serotalk Tech Chat, because that's going to be a little bit difficult to pronounce. But if you do have suggestions, send those over to resources@serotalk.com. When we return from our quick summer hiatus on September 8th, we will announce the winner, and you get to see if you won 150 bonus dollars.
Well, let's get into the news, because again, we have a lot of stuff to cover today. And it looks like a second U.S. federal judge has ruled that his state anti-discrimination laws do not apply when it comes to airlines, not only their kiosks, but their websites as well. So JetBlue has won again with United, and both won their cases, having them thrown out of court, saying they do not have to make their kiosks accessible and their websites can continue to remain inaccessible to the blind. Great. You got to love it. So, you know, what do we do? I guess it's time for us to take advocacy into our own hands. Certainly opting to fly other airlines when at all possible. Maybe even getting out there on your blogs and Facebook and Twitter and other tools and just letting them know this is not cool.
And a lot of people are opting to do that. And they're posting to social media talking about boycotting JetBlue. And it's not just blind people who are doing this. There are sighted friends and family who are also jumping on board with this. And I think that a part of it is JetBlue was really pretty crass, especially when it came to their responses on social media. They were sort of doing a happy dance saying, aha, we don't have to do anything to our websites or kiosks or any of that. But, oh, by the way, we really do care about our people with disabilities. And so they were trying to walk a fine line, indicating that they really did care about what we had to say, except not. And I don't think it worked well for them. But there's an article which talks about users who should become their own advocates and why. The article starts out by talking about the JetBlue incident, but it goes on to talk about why it is that we should advocate for ourselves and why a lot of people don't do that. Generally, it's that people are assuming that somebody else is already doing it, so why do they need to step up to the plate? You know, okay, somebody else is already taking care of that, I just won't bother. Or they don't want to be seen as troublemakers. So they kind of sit back and take it rather than bringing something to a company's attention saying, this isn't right. But if we don't advocate for ourselves, then there aren't going to be enough of us to make a business case for why something should be changed. People aren't going to do things because it's the right thing to do or whatever. They're going to do something if it makes business sense to do so. And in order to make a case for that, you have to have a number of people responding saying that this is truly an issue.
Well, on a more positive note, it looks like Deanna Jones has won her case to allow her to use a computer to take her ethics exam, something required for folks going into the law profession. But this will allow her to forego the need to have a human to read her tests. The argument posted says that using a computer One could enter a thumb drive into the mix, allowing them to cheat on their tests. And this is interesting and carries over because we've had this discussion in our chat rooms of folks in college saying their professors have denied them the ability to take their tests. And they want them to go to the resource centers for the college and have a human actually read them their tests. So when you're talking about advocacy, this is something we're going to have to really be vigilant about and either assisting folks who are having these problems. And we'd like to hear from you, resources@serotalk.com, if this is something that you're dealing with on a regular basis. Because, and even in her case, the fight is not over. This could be appealed and challenged on into the future, depending upon how much time and energy they want to put into it.
Well, have you encountered accessibility issues while banking? You could then take part in this class action lawsuit against Wachovia/Wells Fargo. If you encountered any of these issues before March 2011, you can file to be a part of this class action lawsuit. And this could include any sort of accessibility issue, be it inability to get into a building because of lack of ramps and things like that, or if you are deaf or deafblind and you attempted to make relay calls, which were refused, you can file for this. And again, check out the show notes for information on how to get involved.
Susan Clarkson, age 64 and blind, may be going to prison due to her protesting various nuclear atomic weapons testing. In the past, she has been arrested outside of both the White House and the Pentagon. Of course, she's hanging out in England, and she's already been incarcerated for 10 days, but she may be going up again. We'll have to wait and see what happens.
Yep, and she was actually pretty nonchalant about the whole thing. I mean, she was moving forward with this because she has conviction about this, but she essentially said, you know, it wasn't so bad the last time I was behind bars. I got to talk to a lot of people, and it was good times. But obviously, this time she may have a much more extended stay.
Well, there's a few surveys for those of you who like to get involved, to make your opinions known. And Justin Romack asks that we get involved in writing a service that's called Disqus, spelled D-I-S-Q-U-S. Some of the most prominent blogs and websites are using this service, Disqus, as a discussion engine, working as a bridge to gap between blogs and social networks.
Georgia Tech is conducting a survey, and this one primarily focuses on adults in the workplace with disabilities. And you'll be asked questions about what do you do to make your workplace more economic? What sort of adaptations do you make in the workplace for any disability that you may have? And they're doing this because they want to get a general idea of things that people already do for themselves in order that they can get a better idea of how to improve workplace atmosphere, so to speak, in general.
A 9-question survey seeks to know the main accessibility barriers encountered when attempting to use social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube. The results will benefit the Quebec government. So I guess it mainly be of interest to those of you in the Quebec province of Canada, but you can check that out. We have a link at serotalk.com.
eBay also has a survey going on right now. And it has a fair number of questions, so it's going to take you probably 15 minutes to get through the survey. But it's asking how you use assistive technology either on your mobile phone or on your computer, what types of marketplace sites you visit, what screen readers you generally use, and any improvements that eBay itself can make in terms of accessibility. Once you've done this survey, you can opt to be a part of an ongoing collaboration with eBay where you answer questions monthly about improvements that they make in accessibility, and you agree to talk to a human and sort of expand on the questions that you initially answered, and you get financially compensated. So that's a good thing if you are chosen.
Oh, I didn't look that far.
Yeah, if you're chosen, once you complete the survey, if you give your contact info and you're chosen to participate in an ongoing manner, then yeah, they'll pay you some.
Very cool. There you go, folks. Earn some bucks. Well, the new DVD has been released on going blind, and it includes audio description, also with English and Spanish subtitles, and it's pretty affordable for individuals. It's $9.99 You can buy it outright, or you can rent it for as low as $1.99.
Well, Eric Weinmayer, the first blind person to climb to the summit of Mount Everest, is participating in Expedition Impossible, which is a show on ABC. And he publishes an article where he talks about what it was like on the sixth episode. And they really go on some harrowing adventures through waterfalls and other things like that. And he talks about how he did this and how at some points there was a helicopter flying overhead, so he couldn't hear the instructions from his teammates, and that was a bit of a challenge, but it's certainly well worth the read. I'm not going to be cast in the show anytime soon, but I really enjoyed reading about how he approached this.
And speaking of harrowing, Dennis Howard, at age 62 with limited vision, only 7% in his left eye, plans to sail around the world. Based in San Diego, and again with 7% of vision in his left eye, totally blind in right eye, he plans to spend the next 2 years on his 20-foot boat, the Avalo. Howard said that by doing this, hopefully it will motivate other folks, inspire them to get out of their homes and do something more with their lives. We wish him success with that. You can keep up with his efforts by visiting insightsailing.com. Well, I've played baseball and basketball, but I've never played football. I had no idea that blind folks play football. But blind footballers in Britain are preparing for the 2012 Paralympic Games in London. Blind players have to keep the ball close to their feet. There's no cheering allowed during the game itself. And the game, basically, a team consists of five players, a coach, a sighted goalkeeper, and a guide behind each goal, telling the blind players where the ball actually is. And they use boards that go down the sides to kind of keep the ball within bounds and helps the players audibly know where the ball is located. That is pretty cool stuff. We got a link to it, and you can actually see there's a YouTube video. It's on YouTube. I think it's a BBC video you can actually see. It's very cool. I had no idea blind folks were doing that. Let me ask you this one. I didn't know this. I played this song many a time over and over again. But how many of you actually remember the song from Sade called Smooth Operator?
Oh, yes. I remember the song. Yep.
Yeah. It was actually produced by Mr. Robin Miller, who himself is blind, and he is actually responsible for 44 number one songs to his credit, totaling £400 million. I think that's a lot of dollars.
Now, here's a job I would love to have, and that is being a food critic. I think I could be good at that, or at least I'd have a lot of fun doing it. There's an article in VisionAware, and it's an interview with Dan Aronoff, who is a food critic in New York. And so for this article, he and Maureen Duffy, who authors the article, meet up at a New York steakhouse to have a giant burger and a lobster roll. And Dan talks about how he got into doing this. And what's interesting to me is that so many people often think, oh, well, you're blind, so your other senses are magically heightened or whatever. And he dismisses that in this article. It's just that he's able to focus on taste, smell, the ambiance of the restaurant and all that stuff. And so he doesn't do anything about the visual dining experience, but the rest of it, when he describes what it's like to be at this restaurant, you really feel like you're there and you definitely want to give those giant steak fries a try. He has a website at www.blindtastetest.net if you want to check out where's the best place to get a burger in New York.
Speaking of taste testing, have you ever thought about making your own wine? Well, C.P. Lin is doing just that. Originally born in Taiwan and now living in Christchurch, New Zealand, he started off studying mathematics and electrical engineering, and then he joined the wine taste testing club there and decided, geez, I want to do this, like a lot. So he talks about dealing with the prejudice that led him first and even being denied the honor or ability to study winemaking, and then the rejection letters from no less than 400 wineries.
Wow.
Well, and when you're too drunk to drive, because as we always say in our public service announcements, never drive while blind or drunk.
Or both.
Or both. Many cities are adding, though, ADA transit coupons and basically cab rides at a discounted rate. So in this particular story, they talk about in Phoenix, they've implemented something where people can buy up to $80 of vouchers for the price of $32. I know in Indianapolis, they have a program now where you can buy 10 rides for, I think, about that same price of $30. So you can go anywhere in the city, but you're limited to like 10 rides over the course of a month. And that's great for folks who need that to get out and take care of your errands and do business. So I'm curious if your city offers this program. We mentioned in an earlier podcast, New York City was considering something like that. So would you be interested in this service? Is it available in other cities? Or do you feel that this service should not be offered? Are you from the old school that feels like you should pay the same price as everyone else and there should be no special concessions? We'd like to hear from you on any of those at resources@serotalk.com.
Well, the Google driverless car is in the news again, and this time there were screaming headlines about the driverless car caused a five-car pileup, and everybody was sort of saying, see, look, they're really not safe after all. But it turns out that a human may have been at the wheel, so this may not have occurred when the car was in its auto navigation mode. Google is still looking at this, and they should be able to tell who was actually driving based on analyzing brake patterns and response times and things like that, because there is a clear difference when a human is driving and when this thing is on autopilot, basically. But naturally, Google is saying, no, it wasn't the car's fault, it was a human. But the reports haven't been released to definitively say one way or the other.
Well, it's interesting. It said a Prius, which is what the Google cars are for the most part,
yep,
hit another Prius, which hit an Accord, hitting another Honda Accord, who in turn hit another Prius. Is that all they drive out there?
I guess.
Or is this?
And it prompted me to wonder what the plural of Prius is. Priuses?
Prii? Prii. I like it because it's probably wrong and it just sounds weird.
Yes.
Oh, you got to love it. But Google's not the only game in town. Apparently, researchers at the National University of Defense Technology in China have recently debuted a driverless, also known as autonomous, vehicle of their own. It made a 154-mile journey on a busy freeway in 3 hours and 20 minutes. Now, I didn't say if there was a human sitting behind the wheel, just to make sure what was going on. But the top speed was set at 68 miles an hour. It passed 67 vehicles in the process. Went through some stormy weather and fog and some places where the road lanes apparently were not clearly marked. Apparently uses no GPS technology, but it does have a computer that makes driving decisions in 40 milliseconds, as opposed to humans like us, who take a whole long 500 milliseconds or one half a second to make a decision before we do. That's interesting, because if someone pulls out in front of you and you're going 60 miles an hour, that means you travel at least 45 feet before you even do anything as a human. So in theory, these computer-driven vehicles should be able to do things faster and more efficiently. So we'll see what happens there.
Indeed. The interesting thing about this, as opposed to Google's car, is that it can't see at night. So at least so far, this is only going to be on the freeway during the daytime. Well, Ford asks people to vote on 4 sounds that hybrids will make, indicating that they are near you. Now, I was disappointed that they didn't include the classic auga sound in this, but you can vote on which one of these 4 sounds the most pleasant and audible to you.
Yeah, apparently President Obama signed a law last year mandating that these electric cars make some sort of noise to let pedestrians know that they are approaching. And final implementation of that should take place at some point in 2014. And of course, if you listen to our interviews, we heard the sound that Toyota plans to be using in their vehicles. It's kind of an annoying sound. Now, it may have been made louder by the compression, you know, when we put it in the MP3 file. But I think it'll get your attention. I'd be curious to see what kind of weird sounds we'll hear.
Yeah, for sure.
Down the road. We won't know what it is, but it's coming in our direction. And it's in the street. So let's get out of the way.
Exactly.
We found a variety of guides on assistive technologies to be used in K-12 schools, what works best, cost and funding resources, and just different software and tools for differing disabilities. And there's all kinds of guides. It's a great resource. if you are a parent or a student and you're having difficulty getting your school district to get the tools that you need, by all means, check this link out over at SarahTalk.com.
Well, if you're a student, you're definitely going to find this of interest. The beta of a site called accesstext.org will search across multiple sites for textbooks in accessible format. So no longer do you necessarily have to buy your books from the bookstore and scan them yourself, or have the disabled student services or whatever they call it do that scanning for you. This is going to search across things like Bookshare, NLS, things like that, in addition to CourseSmart and a couple of other mainstream textbook providers, to find a textbook that you can read in accessible format.
And that's not the only game in town, apparently. Also, APH has launched their new offering with 375,000 titles. You can research all formats, Braille, large print, sound, or electronic files, as they call them, e-files. Or you can choose browse by subject and get a large list of subject categories.
Well, if you've got a Kindle and you've been struggling with how to get all those articles that you want to read over to the Kindle quickly, you might be interested in this tool called Send to Reader. You're going to be able to push content that you see in your browser. So if you come across an article that you really want to read and you just don't have time to do that, you can, with a single click, once this tool is installed, send those articles right to your Kindle, so that when you're out and about or you're lying in bed reading, your material is going to be there waiting for you.
And Humanware has created a new audio tutorial on use of the Victor Reader Stream. It's a nice little zip file with a bunch of friendly little MP3s to help you get the most out of your Victor Reader Stream. If you're still using that and kept it out of the tub and working and functioning, you can get that over at humanware.com or humanware.ca, or get the direct link to the zip file with all those MP3 goodies at SarahTalk.com.
Well, Daisy players like the Victor are awesome, but sometimes you just want to record some quick reminder. You want to make a note to yourself. The Wilson Digital Voice Recorder may be perfect for you. This is only $29.95, and it's a tiny little voice recorder that, again, you can just carry with you, and you can make notes to yourself. You can record phone numbers and all the things that you find yourself needing to take down on a daily basis, but you don't necessarily want to drag out a note taker, or you don't have your Daisy player with you. This can hook up to your PC so that you can transfer content from the recorder to the PC. And again, $30, can't beat that.
Well, if you or someone you know has some mobility limitations, we found a list of useful gadgets for people with disabilities for under $50. Most of these were tools for like getting in and out of the vehicle and so forth, but some great resources, so check it out over at SarahTalk.com.
Well, the latest version of NVDA has been released. This is version 2011.2, and you can go and grab that at NVDA-project.org.
And not only that, but they're also gauging the interest of how many people would actually like to pay to have the eloquent speech with their NVDA. And they're proposing two options, either $30 for one voice or $40 for all voices. So if you're interested in that, you should go over and express your interest, choose the option, which of the two you want, $30 for one voice, $40 for all voices, and give your email address. It's no commitment, but at least expressing an interest so they can contact you if you wish to pursue it.
Well, NVDA is not the only screen reader out there. Now, of course, there is SA2Go that you can use while you're out and about, and you'll want to pay for that if you're using it as a primary screen reader or you find yourself using daily. But for screen readers in addition to NVDA that are free, the AFB Access World crew take a look at the Thunder screen reader, and they compare that to NVDA. It's definitely an interesting read. Now, the bottom line is that NVDA is much more flexible and a bit more functional in things like browsing the web and using Microsoft Outlook for email and those sorts of things. But if you want to read the entire comparison and get an idea of what Thunder does well and what NVDA does well, you can head over to accessworld.org and check out the latest issue.
Recently, we mentioned a service called Ninite, N-I-N-I-T-E, for installing software automatically. You basically go to the website and press space bar and check the boxes of all the apps you want installed. But we found out a variant of it at ninite.com/accessible. And what you can do there, this is very cool because all the software it lists has been proven to be accessible. And there's also a copy of NVDA. You can check the box and have that free screen reader installed with your other apps. So if you're building a new computer, this could be a great way to get it up to speed quickly. Now, after I posted that on Twitter, someone came back and said there was an error in the installer. So hopefully that has been fixed.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that was before the official release of 2011.2. So hopefully they have resolved that issue. But very cool. Ninite, that's spelled ninite.com/accessible. And you can give it a try. It is free. It doesn't cost anything. Now, they do have an updater you can pay for if you like. I think it's $9.95. for one computer, $24.95 for five computers. And that way, anytime any of the software that you've installed has updates, it'll go ahead and automatically update it in the background for you. And that might be worth it alone just to automatically update your Adobe Flash.
Oh, yeah.
Which
no
is
kidding.
Annoying, you know, just so it doesn't, because I've found just that thing waiting for you to click the I button
the
and
I
everything.
Button
and sometimes, and the Q button and the unlabeled button that is other than the Q button. And so it just seems to help automate a lot of that stuff. It's a great service.
Well, we love the folks over at Access World. And not only do they talk about free screen readers in this month's issue, they also do a comparison of three affordable video magnifiers. So you can head on over to, again, accessworld.org and take a look at these affordable magnifiers and see which one might be good for you.
Well, quite a few of the stories we mentioned this time are some posts over at applevis.com. One is an app I haven't played with yet called Voice Reader for iPhone, iPod Touch, and iPad. It offers 32 voices in 21 different languages. Basically, you can just copy your text from emails, websites, documents, other notes, and applications. And it even works in the background, so you can begin it and do other things while listening. The online voices apparently cost nothing, but they have a limitation of reading up to 2,000 characters, or you can purchase the offline voices that work without any limitations. And the app, it's funny because the reviewer said, the only complaint I have is it costs $1.99.
Oh, how apparently, dare they?
How dare they? Well, apparently, he's never lived in the ghetto. But anyway, $1.99, you can't beat it for a very functional app. And so you don't have to listen to Samantha.
Yes, indeed.
Ricky sounds better when she says it.
I'm kind of happy about that. Although I don't know what this particular synth sounds like. I believe they're using something called LinguaText, and that gives them access to a number of different languages. But again, I have not heard the voices yet, so they could be far worse than Samantha for all I know. Well, have you ever wondered, whenever people are talking about all these different things like landmarks and ARIA and all that stuff, what does all of that actually mean? There's a post in the Pace Yellow group blog, and it's called HTML5 Accessibility Chops. This particular article in the series explores what ARIA is and what ARIA landmarks mean. It talks about which screen readers actually support the use of ARIA. And so if you've been wondering what this stuff means and how you can use it, that's definitely worth a read.
A new experimental online Braille translation site has been set up. You basically go there, choose some parameters like number of lines and number of characters per line and a whole bunch of cool stuff. And you upload your document and off it goes. So you can check it out. It's abilitiesoft.com/translate.html. Of course, you can get the link. Where else but serotalk.com?
I actually enjoy using Microsoft Office, and perhaps I'm alone in that, and maybe I'm not. But the one thing I like best is knowing the keyboard shortcuts to use for Office. That way I'm not having to hunt through ribbons or menus or any of that to remember how to perform a task. There has been published in Lifehacker a list of Office keyboard shortcuts, so that can be very useful if you find yourself cursing the ribbon and banging your head against the desk trying to remember how to do something. Just go take a look at this shortcut list, and that'll make your life a whole lot easier.
I wonder how many there are, because, you know, there's a total of like 1,855 commands for Microsoft Word. So I wonder, I certainly can't make that many shortcuts.
No, I don't think there are that many shortcuts, but I think you can. There are some things that don't appear on the toolbar by default, or some things that don't have a hotkey associated with them by default, and you can assign hotkeys to some of those things.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, there's a lot of configuration that can be done, so that's worth a look to implement those commands you use over and over again. Well, if you use or want to use WordPress widgets, here's something I did not know. You can actually turn on accessibility mode through what's called Screen Options Menu. You can then use Edit or Edit links rather than having to drag and drop them, as we were trying to do the other day. And we thank Sarah Gooding for an informative blog post on that. WordPress widgets.
Indeed. Well, if you are a user of the Chrome browser, whether you're using a Chromebook or you're just using this on the PC, you might be interested in this user script that gives user speech input. Now, this only works in certain places, and there is a microphone icon which indicates where you can speak. And the person who wrote this post was talking about going through, and he was attempting to make a WordPress post, and in every edit box, he could talk and use this speech input method, except not in the main posting area. So that was kind of unfortunate. The bottom line is that apparently this, it's a little bit clunky right now, and it needs some improvements. Unlike most speech recognition, you do have to speak a bit more slowly than normal for this to work for you. But for right now, it could be a fun toy for you.
While Google says they considered accessibility with Google Plus from day one, a review by WebEx shows that they have quite a way to go. I got kind of confused on all of it because I really haven't played with Google Plus. I can only refer you to go over and read more at serotalk.com. But he went into some great detail about the way that it works and what can be done and what's a challenge right now. We have quite a few stories that actually go into detail about Google Plus, because if you just need some pointers on using it, we found some great tips. We put on there from, what is it, howto.cnet.com. That's a great resource if you just want to figure out how to do things. Another great resource, of course, is Lifehacker. They point out some privacy controls that you're going to want to be aware of if you use Google Plus. And speaking of Lifehacker, they also offer a beginner's guide to setting up your new Android phone.
Yes, indeed. Now, this does not include accessibility, but it does talk about the types of things that you'll need to go through to get your Android phone going. Once you've done that, of course, you might want some tips in terms of how to use this new phone that you've gotten. And there is, again, in Lifehacker, an article covering that. It talks about some interesting things. For example, if you're an iPhone user, it gives some tips that are specifically for previous iPhone users that may make using Android a bit easier.
Going back to Google Plus for a second, one of the things that I read today on our record date is that the Games tab in Google Plus, yes, there will be games, but unlike Facebook, comments and updates do not happen in your stream. So when you're getting your news feed from what is essentially the timeline in Twitter or the main feed line from Facebook, you won't get, come and join and mow my lawn on Facebook, or come over and help me Farmville, or come over here to Mafia Wars. All that goes in a separate notification pane in the game section. So those who really aren't a part of that don't have to even look at it. So there may be some advantages to Google Plus moving forward.
Yeah, I'm curious to see if people are actually playing any of these games.
Zynga is involved.
Or maybe that's why they're getting away from Facebook. I don't want games anymore.
When they announced the games function, the first game up there was Angry Birds. So there you go. Rovio to the rescue.
Indeed.
Yeah, you just heard his cats are worth like $1.2 billion. Wow.
It's a lot of birds.
The makers of Angry Birds.
That is
a lot of birds. A lot of bird feed.
Yes.
But on the subject of Android, a new study says that drive-by attacks targeting smartphones are destined or very likely to be in our future. because a review of over 10,000 apps downloaded from the Android marketplace said that out of those, 842 are leaking private information by sending your IMEI and your IMSI numbers to remote servers. And the problem is that some of these use your IMEI. You may have heard of that. That's been around for quite a while. They're sending that number as your user ID, which potentially could allow phone cloning. Now, many of you probably remember, if you're old school and had the old analog phones that used to broadcast between 870 and 890 megahertz, you could listen to on your scanner and all that cool stuff. But the problem was eliminated once those phones, once everything went all digital. So now we could have a recurrence of phone cloning. The phone cloners.
Yikes. Well, speaking of privacy or lack thereof, a bill has been passed which is requiring ISPs to keep records of your activity. And the reason for this bill, at least the reason that is given, is to track down and crack down on child pornography. The way the bill works, though, is that for up to 1 year, your browser history, all of the places that you visited, and pretty much everything that you've done through your ISP is going to be saved. And the problem with this, aside from the fact that your browser history is being saved and you can't really do anything about that, the problem is that this is going to be like searching for a needle in a haystack. If you have browser history for every single customer, now, how is a law enforcement professional going to go through all of this stuff and say, okay, we can eliminate the stuff that's going to the home shopping network and don't need to pay attention to the person who just bought a bunch of books off Amazon or whatever? How are they going to search this information with any degree of success to find what they're actually looking for?
Well, it's per user. I mean, it's under the guise of protecting children with internet porn, but it's specific customer data. Your name, address, phone number, credit card numbers,
yep,
bank account numbers, dynamic IP addresses. So every time the ISP changes your IP address,
you're still
all that.
Trackable.
So basically, there's a dossier on you, on the person who's paying for it. So if your kids are downloading things they shouldn't be, getting music, hey, let's get the RIAA and the Motion Picture Association involved in it, but also all the websites that you visit. And equally disturbing is the fact that law enforcement can look at this at any time, and there's no provision that says you even have to be notified that it's taking place.
Exactly.
So they can sit there and start looking at you on a daily or hourly or a live, real-time occurrence to see what you are doing. I don't think it's officially passed. It has passed the House of Representatives. I have not heard that it's cleared the U.S. Senate. And, so there are entities out there trying to fight this.
Right. And the article does go into some things that you can do to prevent yourself from being tracked. For example, it points out that cellular data is not subject to this for the moment anyway. And it also talks about using a VPN so that you have encrypted connections to somewhere other than your ISP, or perhaps using something like Tor to be an anonymizer so that whatever you're doing is not going directly through the ISP.
Right, just as criminals already use cell phones for other things, like track phones they use for 2 or 3 days, throw it in the dumpster, great. Now they'll use it for other illegal activities, and those using ISPs will be singled out. You gotta love it. You gotta love it. Well, Ricky, have you played with this one? Haven't done so yet, but apparently one of the number one apps right now is Facebook Messenger. And apparently it is pretty accessible and free.
What
now.
More could you ask?
I always have to qualify that for now, you know, because who knows when it's going to change. But
yeah, I'll prefer to be optimistic. I haven't looked at this yet. I haven't necessarily wanted to engage in long chats with my Facebook friends via the touch screen, but I can do that if I wish. And again, that app is Facebook Messenger.
Well, it should come as no surprise, but AT&T plans to begin throttling the heaviest data users beginning October 1st, even though they/we are paying $30 per month for, quote, unlimited, unquote,
yes,
data. But if it's any consolation, Verizon will be doing the same thing. And interesting, I just saw, I watch very little TV, but I actually saw an ad the other night for Sprint. They're running a TV commercial right now saying that they're the only one that truly gives you unlimited data and unlimited texts for just $79. Even pointing out that T-Mobile, once you reach 5 gig, will automatically throttle your throughput speed back.
The best quote I heard about this was AT&T plans to throttle heavy data users, and heavy data users want to throttle AT&T.
Indeed. Well, time for our Apple stuff. And one thing we're not reporting as a story because it's still rumor, but everyone wants to know when the iOS, 5 and the iPhones are coming out. But as of now, there's some rumors that maybe there will be an announcement from Apple, an actual press event on September 8th. So we'll see if that happens. That'll be the same day as our return of Tech Chat with its new name.
Yes.
So maybe we'll be able to talk about that. But Apple has added TV shows as a tab to the purchase section of iTunes and has even updated the Apple TV to add iTunes streaming and of TV shows and video support.
In other Apple news, they have been named in an ebook pricing lawsuit. And basically the lawsuit alleges that there has been some collusion between Apple and other publishers such as Penguin, Simon & Schuster, HarperCollins, and the like. And rather than doing the traditional approach where the publisher sets a retail price and then ebook sellers are able to set their own prices, this claims that the publishers as a sort of organization or entity were colluding to set these prices at a particular point.
I always wondered what collusion meant, and now we know.
Yes.
Yeah, that apparently goes against... It's killing a program that Amazon had to abandon called pro-consumer pricing.
There's also talk about how there was trying to set up a tiered system of purchase. So just like you do with Apple songs where you have new songs at $1.29, then $99, and then it goes down from there. There was talk in this lawsuit that the publishers and Apple were trying to set up a tiered pricing system, which is a little different than Amazon, who was trying to actually get books down as cheap as possible or have a fixed rate of $9.99. So
yeah,
there's going to be a lot of talk
so
here.
Much.
Yeah, and it's an argument of wholesale versus another type of retail selling, the ability to set your prices within an app store, and of course, content versus publication, which is an age-old argument that we've heard time and time again.
This should be exciting news to many. Apple is offering a buyback program for old iPhones, iPads, and Macs. Now, some of your devices may not be worth squat, but they'll take them off your hands. Now, it's not real money per se. These are little redeem dollars. You can buy other Apple stuff with it, but there may be some promise. It says an original iPad that's in very good condition is still worth $165. What I want to know is, what about these iPhone 3GS units that we have that you can get for virtually nothing now with a 2-year contract?
Yeah, I know. You can get that for $49. What are they going to say? We will happily provide you 20 cents for your 3GS. But hey, they're allowing you to get this shipped to them for free, and there's no cost for recycling the thing. So you may or may not get something out of it, but you do at least get the opportunity to get rid of it easily. Now, some of you may probably remember that back in July, during the blindness convention season, there was a bit of a kerfuffle about some resolutions that were passed by the NFB. In particular, there was a resolution which dealt with the lack of accessibility in Apple products. And at the time, there were people live tweeting from the event, and then there were people who were taking those live tweets, making their own interpretations, and it sort of became a game of telephone or gossip where the actual wording of the resolution was lost and the meaning of the resolution was misinterpreted as well. If you want to read that resolution, it has now been published, and you can get the link at serotalk.com in our show notes.
Yeah, it was became a very heated debate in Tech Chat 109, in particular between James Gashel and Daryl Shandro, and there were some very good points made, but it helps to kind of read the document and understand why that discussion took place. But also on the NFB front, looks like their Access blog reviews Apple Lion operating system, as well as Adobe Digital Editions, which I haven't played with, but that offers not only the ability to read some PDF files, but also the EPUB, And a lot of books and documents are going to the EPUB format, so you might want to go over and give that a read.
Well, when Lion was first released and you looked for help on using it, there is a link to a Getting Started guide for VoiceOver with Lion. And for whatever reason, it was broken. You got a nice little 404, which wasn't particularly helpful, but that release of the VoiceOver Getting Started guide for Lion is now available. So you can take a look at that.
That's a great, that to me is a must read. It has a lot of keyboard commands I wasn't even aware of. And then at the bottom it showed, so these are new to Lion. I'm like, you tell me all these were in Snow Leopard? I really missed out if that was true.
I know, I was surprised by that too.
Well, that is a must read. You should go get it. They've broken it down by chapters. If nothing else, Section A with all the hotkeys, but it's a great resource. It's written a lot better, I think, than the original Leopard manual for VoiceOver, as I recall looking at. So definitely get that. And an app called Disc Maker allows you to create boot disks. You need only place your Lion installer into your applications folder to make that work. And Apple has also, the other was from a third-party company, but Apple has issued a Lion Recovery Disk Assistant for external drives. And you can do a lot of cool stuff, and you can read the specifics over at SerialTalk.com.
Well, bad news for those of us who do use Macs.
Did someone say bad news?
ZDNet has published an article with a comparison between Windows 7 networking and OS X networking, and it turns out that unfortunately there are a bit more security holes and vulnerabilities in OS X than there are with the Windows operating system. And of course, this does again refute the idea that, oh no, Macs are never under attack. The malware and the networking hacks and things are, those belong to the PC world, not over here in Apple land. That's turns out not to be true.
Yeah, it said in the last 3 years on the Mac, there have been 1,151 major vulnerabilities, whereas Windows, I think it's been 1,325. But when you consider that most folks using the Mac aren't using any kind of virus or malware, spyware software, that could be pretty major. There were some other interesting things to this they were talking about. The whole concept of what they call network privilege escalation was easier to execute on a Mac, and that's not a good thing. It said that most OS X server and services offer weak or broken authentication mechanisms, because I don't know if you know it, in Lion, you can pay another $50 and get all that cool server stuff, but now I'm not sure how safe or prudent of an idea that is.
The quote coming out of Black Hat this month was, Macs were wonderful as an island, but when you connected them, then it was just making them a larger attack vector. So they were better off as being standalone machines, but when you connected them together, it was easy to jump across. And that's going to continue on when you've got things like AirPlay, AirDrop, and all these remote features. Then you've got other devices that can talk to things, making them always open or always susceptible. And earlier in the show, we talked about drive-by. Well, that means that you're going to be able to drive by and always find one of these Bluetooths or Wi-Fi connections open. And, that's things we have to worry about, not just with Mac Defender that we saw earlier this year, but there are going to be lots of things coming as Apple goes from being a boutique vendor to being something very popular, $76 billion, can't be wrong. You're also going to draw the ire and the success rate of hackers to come over your way and start hammering on your operating system. So this is something we should all look at going forward.
And they did point out that Lion improved things quite a bit with the dual sandbox for web browsing, but it'll have to stand the test of time to see if it is truly a more secure operating system overall.
Well, whenever you hear the name Jerry Lewis, I bet there's one thing that you generally think of, and that is the telethon to raise money for muscular dystrophy. Jerry Lewis has been hosting this since 1962, and it turns out that last year was his last year. He's no longer continuing as chairman, nor will he be hosting the event. There are four folks coming in this year to begin hosting the event, and no explanation was really given as to why he isn't doing this anymore. But the thing I found interesting was that the article talked about at one point he had kept this thing going for 21 and a half consecutive hours. Now, that's a lot of talking. This year, it is planned to be 6 hours in length, so you're not going to see these people with their heads drooping and demanding coffee to keep going for the cause or whatever. But again, Jerry Lewis is out in terms of being the chairman and the host for this telethon.
That's a shame.
Well, I know in May he said, yeah, this was going to be his last year, but he was definitely stepping down. Now they're saying he's not, so I don't know if there's health reasons involved. They did say he was 85.
Yep.
So who are the four people? Who's that's what I was wondering. Who's going to step up to the plate?
I didn't recognize any of the names, actually. So, to me, it looked like random people.
A real shame. When I was very young, my parents actually volunteered and took donations and did the call centers. And I remember watching all the different Hollywood stars. I mean, there's the reunion of the Frank Sinatra and Jerry, of course, that happened. And it's a real cultural icon for me to change with the seasons. And I wish, well, at least I hope that there's a retrospective for Jerry on this one, because he did a lot of great things and there was a lot of great work done as well as some wonderful entertainment over the years during the telethons.
Well, and the geek in me just figured out if 62 is his first year, if he'd have done this year, it would have been his 50th. So it's too bad that he can't.
Yeah, it really is.
Well, speaking of research, and that's certainly what they do at the MDA, but the researchers have lost their bid to block human embryonic stem cell research. What does this mean? First of all, it sets a precedent, basically saying that scientists can sue over policies that may affect their ability to get or not get research funding. But it is kind of a big deal because it comes down to whether money is spent for adult stem cell research or embryonic. But stem cell research, from all indications and everything that I've read and all the podcasts and radio shows I've listened to, appears to offer the greatest chance to both reverse, if not eliminate, various physical disabilities and other ailments. So I don't know, if I were investing right now, I would be looking at companies doing this. But of course, there's always a lot of legal hurdles when you get into stem cell and controversial and people start whipping out the Bible and everything. But Let me ask you, I want to hear from you, resources@serotalk.com. Would you use stem cell research if it meant you could get your eyesight back? Do you have a hang-up with it? I'd be curious to see what people think.
Interesting question.
I mean, it's just amazing how they're...
Do give us your feedback.
Well, I mean, they're taking one part of your body and using it to repair another part of your body that's ailing. It's truly fascinating stuff.
So it's better than taking hair transplants from your back and moving it to your head, I guess, to have a full set of hair...
I'm not even going to go there.
Oh, fine.
So, moving quickly onward, there is a new mobile app. And this is the sort of mobile app that really makes sense to me. I'm surprised that this is only just now coming out. This is a mobile app for patients with multiple sclerosis or diabetes or any disease, really, where you need to frequently give yourself injections. And those who deal with this every day tend to carry around a big old paper log so that they can write down not only what time they did their injections, but what injection site they used in order to prevent overusing a particular site, because that's going to cause scar tissue. So this app, and it actually got a Microsoft Hero of the Week award, which is pretty cool, it just allows you to track where you've injected yourself, when you've done so, and it can send you email reminders for when it's time for you to do that injection again.
Well, I just downloaded this. I want to play with it to see if it actually benefits the blind community as well. It really was designed for people who don't have use of their hands to manipulate the mouse, but it's called Camera Mouse, and it's a program allowing you to control the mouse pointer of the computer just by moving your head. Now, it works with Windows 7, Vista, XP. And, of course, you must have a webcam to make it happen, so I would assume the better the webcam and at least some decent lighting in your room is going to help. But you can download this at cameramouse.org, and I have downloaded it this morning. I want to play with it to see if it is actually a benefit to us, if we actually move our head, that it can in turn manipulate the mouse, and if that mouse will speak, depending upon your screen reader, if that will be of use to us.
Well, what's not to love about a big, strong, cuddly robot teddy bear? I think I'd like to have one. This particular robot teddy bear, though, was actually created for a specific purpose, that being moving patients from one place to another. For example, lifting a patient from the floor into a wheelchair or from a wheelchair to a bed. Obviously, that's the kind of thing that's going to put strain on nurses, and they need to be able to have training to do this properly in the first place so that they're not standing there with a patient in their arms and suddenly throw their back out and just collapse to the floor and cause all sorts of horrible problems. But this teddy bear has been designed to assist in that sort of thing. Now, there still does need to be human intervention, but this serves the purpose of not only doing the heavy lifting, but hey, again, it's comforting. You might be really scared when you see somebody who you may question their strength and they're about to lift you from one place to another. You might question that, but having a big cuddly teddy bear do it for you may be a little more relaxing.
What happens when they're violent, they're on meth or something, hoping that teddy bear can become a bouncer, you know, and hold them in place and strap them down and, oh!
I better not hit the teddy bear.
I'm afraid he's the first warrior of the robot invasion. I'm telling you, when the robot uprising happens, this bear is there.
Yeah, well, that gives us all something to look forward to.
Well, this said it was a robot nurse, so is she cute? What? Yeah. Well, our final story before we hear Mike Cabo's review of his favorite pair of headphones. We all need some good headphones. And you're going to like what he found, actually. It's cheap, it's been around, and it's a name brand with a lifetime warranty. But anyway, our final story here. Which would be easier for you to give up for 1 week, your phone or sex?
Yeah.
Yikes. 33% of people said they would give up sex before their phone. And of these 33%, 70% of them were women. This was interesting. The people most likely to choose their phone over a lover are users of the iPhone.
Yeah, now that's weird. I can't quite figure out why that is. And it was also stated that iPhone users generally think that other iPhone users would be the best companions. Now, I have to wonder, though, how many of this 33% of people actually have a choice to begin with? You know, sure, I'll give up that. It's not happening for me anyway, so no big deal to drop that for a while. You know, how many of them have a choice and how many of them really do enjoy one or the other and have an opportunity at both on a regular basis?
For full disclosure, I am the Android person on the panel. Just getting that out there, just saying.
Well, yeah, because it said Android folks prefer other Android lovers as well. BlackBerry users really don't care, don't want a BlackBerry partner. So,
yeah, or maybe they just think, maybe they just associate BlackBerry with corporate stuff. And, you know, so two different divisions of the psyche there. I don't know. Maybe we should do a survey. You know, we talked about surveys earlier in the podcast. We should do our own survey. What would you be willing to give up for a week instead of your phone, or what wouldn't you drop? Because this survey also did include things like chocolate, alcohol, other stuff. So would you keep your phone above all else, or are there things that you simply would not give up?
Let me ask you two this. It said out of the 514 participants, half of them have their phone bedside within reach.
No.
Can I do that?
No, I don't answer it.
I have another room sometimes. No, I mean, I use it as an alarm clock. I don't really answer it.
I am traveling.
Well, my phone doesn't ring.
Yeah, when I'm traveling, I'll have it as an alarm clock. But if I had that thing by my bed, my corporate email goes to my phone and all sorts of other things. And so, you know, every 10 minutes throughout the night,
yeah, push notification. Yeah, I'd get lots of push notifications. It'd drive me crazy.
So-and-so has just sent you a direct message on Twitter. Oh, thank you for waking me up for that.
Yeah, I guess I don't use mine as much in that way. Because if mine rings, does something, it's usually pretty important. Like some of the apps now, you can configure certain times of the night to not bother you with those things. That's what we have in the land of news. A lot of stuff there. By all means, send us your suggestion for a new name for the Serotech Tech Chat, and you could win 150 Serotech dollars to be used on Serotech software and services. And stay tuned as Mike Cabo tells us from his perspective, which is the best pair of economical and good-sounding headphones to put over your ears.
All right. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.
Serotech Tech Chat, take one.
Welcome to the Serotech Tech Chat number.
Horrible, horrible. Serotech Tech Chat, take two.
Welcome to the Serotech
Tech Chat. Come on, man. Take three.
Welcome to Sarah Chick Talkcast. No, well, that could be a show, I guess, but anyway.
The whole thing's no good. I don't know how we can fix it, though.
Hey, listeners, here's your chance to rename the Sarah Talk Tech Chat. Do you have a creative name for a show that talks from a blindness perspective about technology, parenting, advocacy, sports, and everything in between? Send us your suggestions, and you could win 150 Saratech bonus dollars, which can be used to purchase Saratech products and services. The winner will be announced on the show airing Thursday, September 8th. Send your entry to resources@saratalk.com for your chance to win.
Easier to use than the Microsoft Ribbon interface. You are listening to the Saratalk Podcast Network.
Well, we're speaking again with Mike Calvo, but not about speakers, at least not the kind we used to do. We're talking about earbuds and headphones. So I guess the first question before we talk about these different devices is, what's the difference, Mikey, and which do you prefer and why? I assume each kind of has its own time and place to be used.
Well, it does. I've been traveling for a number of years with Saratech and have found that, you know, some things are comfortable to use and some things are not. And what happens for me as a blind person, earbuds are great. For example, when I'm on a plane, when I want to tune out the world, you know, when I want to just be in my little space, I'm in a plane seat, I'm belted in, I really don't need to worry too much about the world around me immediately. So I can put on my earbuds. However, if I'm walking around the house, if I'm lying in my room listening to a book, and I'm watching the kids, not literally but figuratively speaking, listening to kids, whatever it takes for me to babysit the kids, you know, you want to kind of keep one ear open, and you know, but at the same time, you don't want to sacrifice the sound that you get. And as we're going to talk about, the earbuds that I've found are amazing. The sound from them is awesome. And my quest has been, okay, what are some great over-the-ear solutions? Because the earbuds, for me, as well as a number of people, I use the kind that have the little plugs, Michael, the little rubber plugs, you know, and they tend to hurt after a little while, even if the plugs are relatively soft and you've had them for a while, so they've gotten broken in. It still gives you this fatigue on your ears and on your ear canals that I particularly don't care for, and it just takes away from the whole experience. So that's why sometimes I use one versus the other. And the most of the time I use my earbuds is when I'm flying or when I'm in a transportation type situation where I don't want to hear the world around me.
Well, let's start with the, and I have some of these, but I think you have a newer version. These are the Radius Atomic Base 2 black earbuds with carrying case, and they come in for $39.95. And bass is
Michael,
the key word.
These are...
They're bad.
Oh, yeah. No, they're amazing. You know, as I've looked for earbuds, I've played everything. I've played with everything from Dr. Dre, the Monster ones, to the ones from Bose. And I just don't like tinny sounding earbuds. These things do not. They go in your ears. They fill the canals very well. They cancel out the noise. And that's important because they do pretty much effectively what the Bose do, but without having to carry a little power pack, without having to pay the premium. They tune out the world around you. And then they give you this incredible bass. And the way they do that is you've got these little plugs that go in your ear, and attached to them, they have little capsules that kind of rest on the outside of the ear canal, but don't stick out. You don't look weird. You don't have anything sticking out of your ears. But they give you, combined with your ear canal, they give you this bass reflex that's just amazing. It doesn't matter what you're listening to, and especially when you're listening to a described video, man, oh my gosh, it's just amazing to put them on a Victor Stream or any of these other devices that we use to listen to the movies on the network. And just immerse yourself totally in the experience. So I really like these, and the price point is amazing.
Now, you have to be careful with in-ear buds like that, because if you position them in the wrong way, you shoot audio right into your ear canal, and if the volume's too high, you can actually cause some hearing damage.
Well, yeah, you've got to do that with any solution. I mean, when you put something this close to your ears, it's definitely something you need to be very careful of, and that's one of the things that I like about the iPods, is the iPods actually have a volume limiter. So if you're giving these to your kids, or if you're just used to, you know, turning on your iPod and flipping up the volume, you know, you're going to be able to limit that and you're not going to get a surprise. The other thing that you may want to do is, of course, turn on in the iPods, turn on sound check, which is kind of like a volume control or a compressor of sorts that kind of keeps everything at the same volume. So you're not going to get any surprises. The one thing I will say, Michael, about these and every other set of earphones, just like speakers, you know, when you first get them, they're not going to sound as great as they're going to sound with age. And the reason for that, people say, well, why is that? You know, the reason for that is as the speakers roll, as they move, as the coils warm up, you know, they get better. So after, you're going to probably want to use them for about 30, 40 hours before you're really going to get the maximum potential. And that's what I had to do with these other earphones we're going to talk about, is had to run them first for 40, 50 hours, just playing different types of things through them before I then finally sat down and said, okay, I like these or those, or I prefer hearing this kind of music on these or that kind of music on those.
So other than in-ear buds, these Radius Atomic Bass, you looked at many, but really your choices came down to two products. So let's first talk about the slightly more expensive Sennheiser PX100-2. These come in at $67.95. What do you like about the Sennheisers?
Well, first, I really appreciate the feedback that I've gotten from those on Twitter that follow me and follow Serotalk on Twitter. I was able to get a lot of great feedback from people as to what they liked, and that kind of led me down the road of looking. The thing that started me down this road was a buddy of mine just sent me a listing for a pair of earphones, and I looked at them and I loved them from the specs. And then I put out my Twitter and said, hey, what do you guys think? And everybody started talking about these next ones that we're going to talk about after the Sennheisers, but they also talked about these Sennheisers. And I kept seeing that the Sennheisers and the next ones that we're going to talk about kept coming up in conversation. I went and I looked at a bunch of other ones, just other over-the-ear solutions, even, again, Bose, the Monster, the Dr. Dre's. Dr. Dre's got a pair of over-the-ear studio earphones, Michael, that are just amazing to listen to. They're like $500 though, but they are, and they're like huge, you know, they cover your ears. I mean, these are studio phones. These are the ones we're talking about now are not like that. These are mini earphones that you can put in your bag. You can fold them up, throw them in your backpack, whatever, and whip them out. And you're not looking really strange, like you're about to do a jam session in a recording studio with them. But let me tell you, if you want the ultimate amazing sound in over the ear earphones that just block out the world and they're studio level, go get the Dr. Dre Beats, but the Beat Pros, the ones that they that Monster makes for the studio. They'll set you back about $500, but they are the most amazing earphones you have ever heard. So just, but I digress. Back to the Sennheisers. You know, Sennheiser's known for a very good product. It's German engineering in broadcast. We use a lot of Sennheiser stuff. You know, Sennheiser microphones, Sennheiser headsets. I mean, so Sennheiser, for people who are into pro gear, know that Sennheiser is a name you can count on. And of course, it's also reflected in the very high price, relatively speaking, to Sennheiser's products. You know, here you've got a pair of headphones that, or over-the-ear earphones, mini earphones they call them, that sound great. They're great looking. They fold up very nice. They come in a bag, a little kind of a denim-y bag with a quarter-inch adapter. So they're a 1/8-inch adapter first. Then you can plug in the little quarter-inch adapter to make them work on older equipment or on professional type equipment that don't accept the 1/8-inch jacks. And these are really nice. Now, the only complaint I have about any over-the-ear solutions is that people around you can hear kind of sort of what you're listening to. So that's going to always be an issue unless you're listening to a book or something where people really can't, because you're not going to be blasting that stuff in your ears. But that minor inconvenience aside, these X100-2s are awesome. And they are Dash 2, which is Dash II. They had originally put out the X100s, and from the reviews I read online, I can still buy them, but I decided now I'll get the latest and greatest one. And from what I hear, you know, of course you've got the audiophiles that sit there and say, well, I like this one better. And, you know, oh, darn it, I remember the good old days of the X100s and the X100-2s lost something or whatever. But for the most part, I would submit that they probably haven't changed a lot, except for a couple of features. One of them is a non-tangle cord. You have a cord that doesn't get tangled. It's a one-side cord. So on your left ear, Michael, you have just one little cable that you can, you know, discreetly put into your iPod or your MP3 player or even your cell phone, and you know, really discreetly hide it. So that's a feature, I believe, of the X100s, -2s, and not the original X100.
Yeah, that is important, because I find that phones with a wire coming off of each side are a little more likely to be damaged. It's just been my experience. Maybe I'm tough on headphones, but that's been my observation.
Well, no, and that's true, and especially with these, which have a limited one-year warranty. And be careful for that word limited, people. You know, you're not going to spend your $67 and then have a problem and then have them come back and say, oh no, we can't replace these, you know, because it's not covered under warranty, because it wasn't damaged in manufacturing. And that's something that you need to be very, very careful of. But I'll tell you, they sound great. They're available. We have a link to them in the show notes. And by the way, every time you click on something you buy from Serotalk, you are supporting the podcast. You're, of course, supporting our sponsors, but you're also we are also affiliates on Amazon, and we do get a little something every time you buy something. So please do make sure you support the cause.
And that helps, because that's money that we can spend either to purchase products for demoing purposes or to travel to locations to get great interviews for you as well.
Yeah, it's important that we talked about that for a second, Michael. You know, we buy our own review stuff here. We go out, we pay for it, we use it, we share it with other people, we give it away, or we just take it with us, you know, on the road when we go to technology shows or whatever. But for the most part, we buy stuff. There are times, for example, the Foxell people, that they provide something for us to play with and listen to, but we don't use that as a way of making our reviews any more biased. Remember, we don't have labs here, folks. We don't do any of that. We're just consumers just like you, and we're out here just playing with the stuff and say, you know, I like this, or I don't like that. That stinks about the product, or this is great about the product. And I think that us going out and buying the stuff gives us the right to just say what we believe without feeling that, oh man, you know, these guys went to the extreme of giving us this product and whatever, you know. So it is important that you guys understand that we do buy our review products. So they're not given to us. They're not sponsored for free or anything like that. So any way that you can support the podcast by purchasing these products through Amazon or through any other e-tailer that we end up creating affiliate links with is greatly appreciated.
Okay, so before you tell us your favorite, let's talk about the third and final pair of phones we want to talk about today. And these apparently have been around for quite a while, perhaps since 1984, these being the COS Porter Pro with case at a price of $31.35.
Now, you know, it's funny, because one of the things that I found with these earphones that really tripped me out was the fact that they've been around since 1984. I mean, I was in high school when these things came out. The fact that they've never changed. They've never changed their design. They've never changed anything about these earphones, and they still continue to be one of the top sellers on Amazon for portable earphones. Says something huge. Now, I will say they do look a little retro. They are not as sexy, if you can, you know, if you can think of such a thing when it comes to earphones, as the Sennheisers. I mean, nobody's going to say you look like a dork, you know, but they are earphones, and it's very clear that they're earphones, and they have a couple of really cool features that I like. They have a sliding, like an over-the-head sliding, you know, band that you can make them bigger or smaller. There's a feature on them that you can flip these little switches over the ears that allow, that kind of pull the cups off your ears a little bit, not enough to you know, to do anything but make them a little more comfortable to wear. You still don't lose any of the amazing sound out of both these and the Sennheisers. The bass out of these devices is just amazing. The highs are just amazing. These are actually rated at 20 to 20,000 hertz. So you're talking about some great dynamic response on these earphones. And hey, unlike the Sennheisers, which are in their second iteration at very minimum, these have never changed. And for half the price, I mean, you really can't beat it. And quite honestly, everybody I've shown them to really can't hear much of a difference between the two, certainly not a $35 difference. And here's the kicker, Michael, warranty. Remember we talked about warranty with the Sennheisers, about their limited one-year warranty. The cost warranty is amazing because it's a no-questions-asked lifetime warranty. That's it. And have you actually taken advantage of that? Because I remember you had told me that you actually had as we were reviewing these.
Yes, I've done it twice. Not with these different headphones, but yes, they do. You pay about $6, which covers the shipping, but you send them back and they send you basically a brand new pair of headphones. So, and it's in Madison, Wisconsin, right here in the USA. So it's a very good company. Yeah.
Yeah. See, they're made here in the USA, which is nice. I mean, I have no problem with products made overseas. I'm not going to go there. It's not a political thing. It's just, I mean, these are American made and they're great earphones. To me, they're great sounding for the money. You cannot go wrong with these things. Again, they're a little more retro looking. They've got that, under the chin type of cable where you've got one cable going to each ear, Michael, and the cable looks like a Y. They come with a little case. They fold up just about as small as the Sennheisers, but not exactly as small. They're made of metal as opposed to the Sennheisers are made of plastic. And also, they don't come with the quarter-inch adapter, if that's a big deal to you. But, you know, those are $2 at Radio Shack or whatever. So
okay, so it really is a mini, though. I thought maybe 1984 it would be a quarter and you'd have to...
No, that's the amazing thing, man, is I can just picture somebody jamming with these things, you know, on their Walkman, with their cassette Walkman, and then playing it with the CD Walkman, and then now moving it into, you know, your iPod and your digital music players. I mean, for a headphone to be able to survive the different changes in generations of portable listening stuff that we've had, you know, portable listening devices, that's pretty darn amazing to me. And that speaks volumes about the quality of this product. And that is why, Michael, this is my favorite too, based on of the two, or of all of them that I reviewed, but of the two in particular, the costs I think are the best bang for the buck. These are the ones that I'm going to keep them. I'm going to use them in my bag. At the end of the day, I started looking for such a thing, and these are the ones that I'm going to carry around in my bag, and I realized that they're not as pretty as the Sennheisers. And I got to say that because my wife is into the look and all that. And I told her, I said, honey, you know, I don't care what they look like. I care what they sound like. I mean, at the end of the day, I don't care. I want them to sound good. So they are very, very cool. And they're great to listen to. They don't bother you even after hours. I found that the Sennheisers, after a couple of hours of listening to them, my ears would sweat just a little. I actually had to take them off my ears for a while to give my ears, just the outside of my ears, a rest because I felt that they were a little tight. These costs were just simply amazing. I really like them. You can buy them on Amazon. I actually found them as well, just in the light of full disclosure here, and I know that we might miss out on a couple of dollars here, but I got to tell you, I found them on eBay, Michael, for $20.
Ooh, nice.
Plus $5 shipping. So, you know, it's about $25. So, I mean, if you want to save $6 and not support the podcast, shame on you. But if you want to do that, you can get them on eBay.
On Amazon's great insurance as well. I mean, if there's any damage, anything wrong with it, you can ship them back. Replace them, so it might be worth it.
Yeah, I'd get them on Amazon, but you can find them on eBay, but for even less money, for heaven's sake. So, I mean, I don't know how these people stay in business, but hey, as long as they continue to put out the great product, like the Cost Porta Pro earphones, I think that they've got a winner here. Obviously, they have they've had these since 1984. That's a long time.
Right. So then your second choice, if you want something that is in ear, you want that, or in addition to, you would obviously go with these Radius Atomic Bass 2 Black, and I've had them as well. They sound really good. Just be careful with them. I've damaged the jack on them, but very good sound, in-ear design. If you want total privacy and your lifestyle allows you to be not bothered, that could be your second choice. So there you go, three choices. We have all of the links for you at serotalk.com. You can purchase them directly from Amazon.
They also make a version of these mega bass, the Radius Mega Bass 2s that have an inline microphone that you can use on portable devices like cell phones or your iPod and your iPad. The cool thing is that the one with the inline microphone has buttons that actually control the iPad, the iPhone, or the iPod right from it. So if you want that and you need the mic, that's also available. I've seen the price. It's about the same. I didn't need it, so I didn't buy it. But that is also another option with these devices. And of course, because they sound so darn great, you can just plug it into one ear and have some great sound in your one ear and block out the world and then use the inline microphone.
All right. Well, Mikey, thanks for sharing your expertise. We welcome your comments as well. If you know some great equipment we're not aware of, and headphones or speakers or anything else, maybe a category of product you'd like us to review, resources at serotalk.com.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us in 2 weeks as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.